Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are, and should be, proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Army vet and businessman Brent Raith. Then, Amanda Winters will discuss concealed carry for women, and General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. So, it's a pleasure to introduce my friend and fellow Army vet, Brent Raith. Welcome, Brent.
Yeah, thank you for having me today, Denny. It's great to be here. And I'd like to say it's a shiny day, but it's a little rainy outside. But that makes the grass grow, right?
It does. My grass is very happy. So I know you're an Army vet. What's the story? When and why did you join the Army?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And I would love to sit here and be able to tell you that it was out of a patriotic duty that, I loved my country so much that I joined the service. But my story is a little bit more about resilience. And so I graduated from Montague High School in 1995, which my kids tell me is like ancient history ago. I was a decent student. I was an athlete, but I lacked a lot of focus. I went to community college, transferred to Western Michigan University, where I didn't do terribly, but I also wasn't lighting it up on the GPA. And I just made a lot of immature decisions. And so I found myself in a position at Western where I had about a year before graduation, and I had basically worked myself into quite a bit of debt and into a place where I didn't think I was going to be able to finish school. And I moved home that summer, trying to figure out what I might do in the future. And that was actually in the springtime. And my dad, who has since passed away, loved me a great deal. And he loved me enough to challenge me to do something with my life differently and challenge me to make new decisions and to follow a path of responsibility and discipline. And he did that by basically putting all my stuff in the driveway and telling me that he loved me, but I couldn't live here anymore. And so that reality check for me really set in motion possibly the best decision I ever made in my entire life. And that was the service. And so I visited all recruitment offices. I went to the Navy. I just couldn't see being on a tiny ship. I love the men and women that served in the Navy. It just wasn't something for me. I didn't like that they didn't guarantee my job. Marine Corps was very similar. You know, they do have some pretty awesome uniforms and swords, but from that perspective, they weren't given really good bonuses. Air Force seemed kind of cool, but again, I needed a way to kind of right set my life. And the Army was all those things for me. They guaranteed my job. The Army recruiter talked to me, was very knowledgeable, very good. Did a great job at what he was doing. I got a really nice significant bonus and decided that that was the place for me. I didn't wait a long time to kind of ship out and to sign up. Once I kind of took the ASVAB and was on my way, I said, like, look, I want to be out of here as fast as I possibly can. And so that is kind of why I joined the service. Again, I'd love to say it was a patriotic thing, but it was really out of necessity. And it was really out of a desire to have something different. And really the first step in my life where I stepped back and I said, okay, I have to take ownership of what's going on. And I thank my dad to this day for helping me with that. I didn't like him very much at the time, as you can imagine.
I understand. What did you do in the Army?
Yeah. So, I took the ASVAB and I thought, okay, I'm going to take this ASVAB and it's going to really narrow the choices for me. Cause you know, there's 1,000 different things you can do in the service. And my recruiter came back and said, hey, you can kind of do anything you want. And I'm like, okay. So I actually went to school for radio ComSec repair. So I fixed Singar's radios, ComSec equipment, KG-84s, anything that encrypted signals between radio communications. I like that it was a 6-month AIT at Fort Gordon, Georgia. And I mean, I learned a whole bunch of skills there that that I really enjoyed. And it kind of set my path down tech. Prior to that, when I was going to Western, I was either going to do something in kind of public policy, maybe teach. And I'd always kind of been tech savvy, but this really set me down that path. I learned wonderful things, basic electronics at school. I learned component level soldering, all kinds of different things, Ohm's law and how electricity works and the different components. It was really cool.
Yep, that certainly makes sense. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Brent Rath. Brent, you got out and now you're the managing partner of an interesting company. Is there a relationship between what you learned in the Army and what you're doing now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that first, the relationship is just around resiliency and success. I think that something the Armed Forces does a wonderful job with is just teaching people how to be disciplined and how to get things done. And so I don't think CatchMark Technologies would be around if I hadn't been, that hadn't been baked into me, and I hadn't seen just the impact of little choices in success, right? The whole idea of dress, right, dress, and that it matters, a couple inches matter, or a couple feet matter, or this decision matters. All these little things matter. So there's a direct connection to that. I also got into technology in the service. You know, I'd mentioned that I was a radio comsec repair. Well, when I got to my first duty station, we were with an Intel unit and they didn't really break that stuff. And I didn't want to pick up cigarette butts. So I volunteered to do more computer related work. We were in the same electronic maintenance shop with them. And that's kind of how it got my start. And that's kind of where my career went and how I ended up where I am now.
Well, that certainly makes sense. I'd be surprised if there was a one-to-one relationship, but obviously there was a lot of different links. So take a minute and tell us what your present business does.
Yeah, so the mission of our business is to help people and solve problems. I think that's important to get out there right away. That's the most important piece, and we're going to use our skills and abilities to do that very thing, help people and solve problems. How we do that and what our skills and abilities are, we're technology problem solvers. And so we use tech skills. We do business-to-business technology support and solutions. We do desktop, server, applications, service and support. We do all kinds of other crazy things like entry control systems and camera systems. Basically, anything that has to do with tech, we can provide a solution or an idea. We also do cybersecurity work. We have, as you can imagine, a focus on DOD manufacturers that are trying to be CMMC compliant, DOD type work. They're making parts for the Department of Defense. And then we do digital marketing and media. So we do social media management, websites. Again, we're kind of trying to be an all service or all in one shop for technology services for small to medium businesses.
That makes sense. We're about out of time, but you're located in Grand Rapids, Michigan. How can people contact you if they'd like to plug in, learn more, or just shoot the bull with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have two office locations, one in Grand Rapids, 3 Mile and Alpine. People are welcome to stop by the office. We also have another location, Whitehall, Michigan, just a little bit north of Muskegon. We have a website, catchmarkit.com. That's where you can start. And we have contact forms there, information you can gain. Or give us a call at 616-384-4610, which is our direct line phone number. If somebody doesn't answer, leave a message. We'll get back to you within a couple hours.
That sounds great. Can you work with people from in other states?
Yeah, absolutely. Our main focus or the main bulk of our business is in Western Michigan, but we have customers in Indiana, Minnesota, Ohio, kind of regional. So yeah.
Makes sense. Brent, thank you. Thanks for sharing with us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. Thank you for what you're doing now. I'm glad we're friends.
Thanks, Denny. I appreciate it.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some knee bends, troops. Go halfway down each time. Do at least 50. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
Unexpected situations do happen. Our nationwide network of self-defense attorneys is always ready to defend you in a criminal and/or civil case. There are zero attorney's fees for covered events and no hourly limits, caps, or deductibles. That means no matter how high your attorney's fees are, they're all covered through your low monthly membership payment. And because you can't choose the moment you need us, we're always here for you, 24/7, 365. Join US Law Shield today and receive immediate coverage, affordable, customizable membership options, and peace of mind.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
From ensuring veterans get the care they deserve, to ending our nation's endless wars, to targeting out-of-control spending, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing America.
You can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere. Visit CVAFrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's CVAFrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Amanda Winters. She's a vet and knows a great deal about firearms and self-defense. Welcome, Amanda.
Hi, Denny. How are you? Thanks for having me again.
Hey, we're friends. We can't get away from each other.
Well, that's true.
Amanda, I know you're in management at Center Shot Gun Range. How did you get interested in firearms? Was it while you were in the service?
A little bit. But I really kind of was like, oh, lead therapy. I just love the smell of lead and gunpowder, right? But then when I retired, I needed a firearm for self-protection because I was doing a lot of camping and outwoodsy stuff. And so I wanted to be able to have one. And then it just kind of blew up from that whenever I moved back home to Michigan and got a part-time job at a gun range.
Well, you know, if you're going to carry and you've got any brains, you do need to know how to do it and how to use it properly and how to carry it and all that kind of stuff. So it is logical. That's not to say there aren't people out there who don't know, but that's a sort of a hypercritical thing. Okay, I know this is supposed to be a prohibited topic, but I'm really aware that there's a difference between men and women.
No, you don't say.
True, I've noticed it, really. And yeah. While I encourage both men and women to get armed when they go out and get trained, particularly if you're carrying concealed, it's a different story, isn't it?
Oh, it's a completely different story. Absolutely.
So talk to us about that. It starts by having a pistol you like and can handle and is easy to carry. The bigger one would be harder to carry. Doesn't it start with picking the right pistol?
I mean, picking the right pistol, you're looking for something that fits your hand, that you can manipulate, you can see your sights easily. You know, it doesn't really matter the color, to be honest with you. It's all about the fit, being able to manipulate it, see your sights, and hitting your target. You know, you may not like that trigger pull, and so everything else might work, but you got to find something else that does work for you. So, you know, that's your first step, finding the right firearm, whether if it's, you know, going shooting with a whole bunch of buddies, going to a range, renting firearms from a range. But don't just go off and buy a gun and be like, yep, I'm going to carry this one. You know, to be honest with you, that's what I did the first time. I went to the store and I said, I want a pretty gun. And I didn't shoot it for a whole year, even though that I got it for self-protection. And so even when I started off, I didn't do it right. And I enjoy sharing my story so people understand, like, okay, just because it's my favorite color, I need to hold off for a minute and get some training and figure out what gun is the right gun for me.
Another part of it, isn't it? That's to buy any kind of a firearm. But if you're going to carry concealed, a big one is what you fit your hand nice, but it'd make you look three times as big as you are when you conceal it.
Not necessarily, because I mean, it all depends also too on your body size. You know, a woman that's a size 2, you know, a full size firearm is going to stick out on her if she carries on body. But if she carries in a purse, nobody's going to know the difference.
Uh-huh.
So there's that. By on body, I mean, you know, a hip carry, a holster that is attached to your body. Off body is anything that is like in a purse or a bag of some sort. So a bag can be a fanny pack for that matter. So, you know, the big gun might work for, it's just not too concealable in a really cute little shirt or pair of shorts. Now you have a larger woman. And since I said a size 2, I'm going to go like, you know, maybe even a size 16 or bigger. The bigger gun would actually fit better because there's a body mass that can actually hide it. And the smaller gun might actually be harder to get to. But again, are you on body or off body? And if you train for it, then you know what you're working with. Like, for example, I have a cousin. She's that size 2 person, but she really loves those old classic boat cars that are like 12 foot long. And she's just always done really well with a bigger vehicle. And that's what's worked for her. And so I can use the same example in a firearm to that same case, because it also depends on how you're going to carry and where that firearm is going to be. Say that size 2 carries a large purse and it's a carry purse and has a large pocket for that firearm. I don't believe that in this instance, your body size does matter what kind of gun you get. It matters how you carry it.
You know, I'm glad that we're doing this, because if I were trying to give this kind of advice, I would have missed almost everything you just said. Maybe that's why we're friends. I don't know. But it's important that all these things be considered prior to carrying concealed, right?
Yes. I mean, you know, when you first buy a firearm, you're getting comfortable in the firearms world, you know, and that's exactly what I did. I bought a firearm. I didn't know what I was doing. And then I got another firearm and I took some training classes and I realized that my very first firearm that I bought doesn't work for me. I still own it. I like it. I like to shoot it, but it's not something I'm going to carry. My second firearm is my training firearm. That's what I take to when I go to different types of classes for advanced training and such. And then I found other types of carry sizes that work for me. And some of them are color and some of them are not. So it's kind of like, what am I going to wear today? It's like an accessory. So if it's a baggier shirt, I might wear the bigger, smaller gun, if you will. And if it's a smaller purse, then I'm going to go for the smaller carry gun.
And this doesn't put down larger ones, which you might just use for home defense, because we're just talking about carrying right now, right?
Now, I mean, in that same instance, I do have a garter carry holster that I can fit my full size firearm in that holds 17 to 21 rounds. I can carry that in my garter belt.
Okay.
So, and in that same pocket, I can have an extra magazine and my phone and my keys right in it. So I'm completely hands-free all day long carrying a full-size frame firearm. And then I can turn around and put a smaller size frame and have the exact same things with me. And I'm hands-free. No purse, no holster I got to worry about, nothing to have to worry about. Well, if I go to the bathroom, is my gun going to fall out of my holster? If I go to the bathroom and leave my purse behind, am I going to lose my gun? So those are the different things. And that's one of my favorite ways to actually carry, is more of that garter belt type style or belly band, if you will.
I think that's, we're really covering some stuff that men might find boring, but women would find very practical. And that's why I'm delighted you could join us today.
Well, you know, speaking of men, they do have men belly bands, and, you know, the fanny packs, the briefcases, and things of that. So, you know, women just have different physical attributes to take into play, right? We've got a good, you know, God-given muscle mass on our chest and, you know, maybe even the hourglass figure. So the roundness of our body and the different shapes of things really makes a difference on what kind of accessories fit well for us. So does it roll over? Does it roll off? Am I too small? Is it too big? And things of that nature. And I'm not saying that men don't have those same things, but majority of the men population do just carry on their belt.
Yep. I fall into that category.
You know, and even one of those, the shoulder holsters, right? Where it sits underneath your armpit.
Yep.
Well, when you have boulders on your shoulders, it's kind of hard to reach around those to get to the gun. So, yep. You know, but you can also use that God-given muscle mass on your chest to hide what you're carrying.
And that's the key issue there. We're about out of time, Amanda. I'm sure some of our listeners may have some questions. How can they reach you? Questions, emails, or phone call?
They can reach me via email, manager@centershotgunrange.com. They can call the range at 616-371-7468, or even through our website at centershotgunrange.com. There is a ask a question or contact us button there. So that would be some of the best ways, or even through our Facebook and Instagram page.
Well, and I strongly recommend Center Shot. That's where I shoot. Thank you, Amanda. Thanks for joining us today, for your right on comments, and for your service to our nation. I'm proud that we're friends.
It is wonderful knowing you, Denny. Absolutely. Thank you so much for today.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month, and we'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. I sure do. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, twice, then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through Frontlines of Freedom or comment on Facebook. And troops, it's time for the Battle of the Month. So, of course, joining us is General Chris Petty. Welcome back, brother.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Denny.
So, Chris, give us a quick review of your time in Mother Army. You, like me, were a West Pointer, right?
I was, you know, back when it was difficult, you know.
back before the Corps had.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, West Point, branched aviation, because infantry sure seemed too hard. So, I did normal, you know, company command and all that good stuff, staff, and I got to take a battalion to Iraq and during the surge, which was, you know, one of those highlights of a career type thing. So did that, and then, became a brigade commander, sending units to Afghanistan and Iraq for years. And then, lo and behold, they want to pin a star on my epaulette and sent me to Bosnia to lead a NATO staff there. And then I worked in the Pentagon and finished out at NORTHCOM in the combatant command. So just wonderful, interesting, fascinating, challenging stuff. Loved it.
So basically you weren't bored.
Yeah, I wasn't bored. Hardly ever was I bored.
Sometimes doing push-ups can be boring. Okay. The Battle of the Month is an amazing battle. Gettysburg. Take us there, brother.
Yeah, so Gettysburg. It's July, so we're going to talk about Gettysburg, the most famous July battle of all time, probably in American history. So this is General Robert E. Lee versus General George Meade. Now, why should we know this battle? As I like to start with, pivotal Civil War battle. It didn't like seal the fate of the Confederacy, but this was considered by a lot of people to be the high water mark of the Confederacy. It was certainly their last invasion of the North. They just never again could muster the strength to get there again. You combine this with what was going on in the West at Vicksburg, and it was kind of the 1-2 punch, you know, like the end was starting to show. Also, it's the largest battle ever on North American soil. So that still holds to this day. 160,000 soldiers fought over these 3 days. And it also, unfortunately, had the highest casualties of all. You know, Antietam is often noted as the single bloodiest day, which it still is. But Gettysburg had the highest total casualties over a 3-day battle of, you know, a battle. And that's 51,000. So it's a big one. But I think, you know, probably more than anything, this really let the Union Army regain confidence in itself, which would then carry on to the end of the war. They had beaten Robert E. Lee and sent him, you know, tail between his legs back, limping into Virginia. So big battle, big effects on the war, and that's why we should know this. Now, the quick summary, which is always a challenge to box this into a quick thing. So Union pressure's building. Okay, I'm setting the scene here real quick, as I like to do. Union pressure's building both in the West and in the East. Lee wants to press his recent advantage at Chancellorsville, where, you know, my personal opinion, his best tactical battle ever. He really humiliated General McClellan just months prior. And so he's going to press the advantage. He's going to do another invasion, kind of siphon forces, hopefully, from the Western theater. He's going to erode the will of the North, all kinds of goals in the campaign. And so it was approved. So on 3 June, Lee begins moving north, his different course. On the Union side, meanwhile, Lincoln is worried. You know, his army, his morale is low. They just got their butts kicked at Chancellorsville. They got to do something. So he's trying to prod McClellan for action. McClellan is convinced that he's outnumbered by Lee, as he always was. And so basically, when he demands reinforcements, Lincoln refuses and he resigns. Okay, so on 28 June, George Meade awakens to a message from Lincoln that he's the commander. All right, so he's now reacting to Lee because Lee's moving. So 2 days later, you know, he's moving his army north. Buford's Union cavalry, operating as a forward left screen of the Union advance, encounters Confederates of A.P. Hill's corps on the outskirts of Gettysburg. Buford thought they would come back in the morning, and lo and behold, they did. So he sets up a hasty defense on McPherson's Ridge, and the battle starts acting out. Now, Gettysburg's interesting because it's like a 3-act play over 3 days. Act 1, day 1, Act 2, day 2, and Act 3, and day 3. So 1 July, Act 1, it's all about building forces. They're converging. These armies are converging. Confederates have an advantage because they were already rallying closer to Gettysburg originally. So they start pushing Union forces back. Luckily, Meade has sent General Hancock forward. General Hancock understands the strategic terrain south of town on Cemetery Hill and Culp's Hill. And that proves decisive. Although on day one, Lee's got the advantage. He's pushing the Union soldiers out of town and looks like he's got the upper hand. So that's Act 1. Act 2 is the next morning. Start 2 July, starts quiet. Lee plans to hit the Union left with Longstreet. That's his main attack. Ewell is the supporting corps on the Union right, going to put pressure. A.P. Hill is going to demonstrate to hold the center. But Lee's attacks were really delayed and uncoordinated. His main attack didn't start till 1600, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then Sickles, of course, didn't help Meade by moving his entire corps forward to create his own salient in the Union line. Nevertheless, there's a lot of bloody action. Peach Orchard, Wheatfield, Devil's Den, famous 20th Maine and Little Round Top. Okay, now 3 July, next day, final act of the play. Lee opens on the Union right at Culp's Hill, but the Union retains the positions. Lee now thinks, I got a weakened center I can attack. He sends Longstreet Corps on the big assault. Pickett's division leads, which is how it's got its name, Pickett's Charge. After a 2-hour artillery duel, largest ever on the North American continent, 15,000 Confederates leave the wood line on Seminary Ridge, move a mile to the Union position, and it was devastating. Lee lost 5,000 soldiers in just an hour as 200 cannons destroyed these troops that were self-cannibalizing actually on the battlefield. So Lee limps off. It's a disaster for the Confederates. Lee prepares for a counterattack that doesn't come, and then he limps back into Virginia a week later. So it's a decisive battle. It's a big turning point, and it is quite a story.
It sure is, and it's one that you could talk about probably for 3 days, much less for 20 minutes together.
Yeah, there's so many stories and sub-stories and plots and subplots. It's a fascinating battle.
And, you know, one of the questions is, when Lee started retreating, why didn't the Union follow him? But I think they were probably as confused and messed up as a big battle can do to everybody as Lee was.
That's right. And, you know, Meade didn't want to press his luck too far. He'd just beaten Lee, and that hadn't happened before, really. So, you know, he didn't want to press his luck and become overextended either.
So, nonetheless, that was a hugely deciding battle. It's very fair to say that it was a turning point in the war, isn't it?
It is. It really is. And remember, this combined with Vicksburg out west really started to, it was the writing on the wall. The Confederate cause was being, you know, strangled by these, in these, both these theaters.
And that is very true. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Chris Petty. Chris, we got a minute left or so. Talk about Battle Digest. It's a great option for folks who want to learn more about our nation's battles. I love it.
Yeah, thanks, Denny. It is good. I'm really proud of it. It's a simpler, concise way to learn history. I would really encourage your listeners to go to battledigest.com. Just one word, battledigest.com. Check out my simple publications on these summaries of famous historical battles, and you can become an expert in, you know, 30 minutes of reading. It's really amazing.
I agree. Chris, thank you. Thank you for this great review of this fantastic battle, and thanks for being a member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. I'm proud we're brothers.
Yeah, me too, Denny. I really enjoyed doing this with you. Thanks.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups this time. Maybe 64. Then I want you to, I really do want your Ranger ready. Maybe 65. Then stand at ease. It's that time of the year again. The U.S. Mint is making their new 2024 American Silver Eagle and American Gold Eagle coins, and there's no better time to shore up your investment in precious metals than now. Call Universal Coin and Bullion at 800-UCB-GOLD to get great prices on the finest gold and silver coins of the year. I work with Universal Coin and Bullion because they're a company that you can trust. So give them a call at 800-UCB-GOLD. That's 800-UCB-GOLD, or check them out at universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S.-only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. I do some coin collecting, and Universal Coin and Bullion was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. You'll like what you find. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, retired Army Sergeant Pedro loves our country, but can't believe all the name-calling that's going on.
Pedro, I understand that. In politics, occasionally speaking negative about your opponent does happen. But candidates who speak often about their opponents as opposed to what they can do for us, that rarely gets my vote.
You know, and Colonel, I've heard rumors that not only are they saying bad things about each other, candidates are being shot.
No.
It's, I saw it. I saw it on the news. It must be true.
I guess we'll talk about that shortly.
All right. And retired Army Colonel Sam appreciates your show. It's nice to be away from the nonstop made-up facts.
Thanks, Sam. We try very hard to confirm the things we say. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 25 July 1814, during the War of 1812, an American army under the command of Major General Jacob Brown, having just won a victory at Chippewa, was compelled by an advancing British army to retreat toward Fort Erie on the Canadian side of the Niagara River. After several hours of fighting, our forces withdrew to Fort Erie and later back across the river into New York. While most of our units were regular army regiments, this army contained a brigade consisting of the 5th Pennsylvania Regiment and a mixed force of New York militia, along with some New York volunteer dragoons. British losses were 876 men. We lost 859. Though the militia didn't play an important role, being part of the reserve, its mere presence was significant. During this war, it was very uncommon to find militia units crossing from the U.S. into enemy territory. Under existing laws, they could not be compelled to do so. Indeed, there were instances where the militia of one state refused to cross a state line to defend their neighbors. These actions lasted until passage of the 1903 Militia Act, bringing the militia, now National Guard, under federal control in time of war.
That's interesting. And on 25 July 1866, Ulysses Grant was named General of the Army, the first officer to hold that rank.
And on 26 July 1948, President Harry Truman, in Executive Order Number 9981, called for equality of treatment and opportunity for all persons in the armed forces without regard to race, color, religion, or national origin. Our military was desegregated, and it was about time.
And we were the first agency or part of the federal government to be desegregated. We led the way. And on 24 July 1959, during the grand opening ceremony of the American National Exhibition in Moscow, Vice President Richard Nixon and Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev engaged in a heated debate about capitalism versus communism in a model kitchen set up at the fair. The so-called kitchen debate became one of the most famous episodes of the Cold War. In 1958, we and the Soviet Union agreed to set up exhibitions in each other's nation as a part of a new emphasis on cultural exchange. The Soviet exhibition opened in New York in June, and ours opened in Moscow in July. Before the Moscow exhibition was open to the public, Nixon hosted a visit by Khrushchev. As he led Khrushchev through our exhibition, the Soviet leader's famous temper began to flare. Khrushchev launched an attack on the so-called Captive Nations Resolution, passed by our Congress just a few days before. The resolution condemned the Soviet control of the captive peoples of Eastern Europe and asked Americans to pray for their deliverance. After denouncing the resolution, Khrushchev then sneered at our technology. With a small army of reporters and photographers following them, they continued the argument in the kitchen. With their voices rising and finger pointing, Khrushchev warned that very bad consequences. Perhaps feeling that the exchange had gone too far, he then noted that they simply wanted peace with all other nations, especially America. Nixon stated that he had not been a very good host. The kitchen debate was front page news, and for a few moments, in the confines of a modern kitchen, the diplomatic gloves came off. America and the Soviet Union verbally jousted over which was superior. As with so many Cold War battles, there were no clear winners, except maybe the media.
I think I'd like to see that one, Colonel. And on 23 July 1967, in the early morning hours, one of the worst riots in U.S. history broke out on 12th Street in the heart of Detroit's predominantly African-American inner city. By the time it was quelled 4 days later by 7,000 National Guard and Army troops, 43 people were dead, 342 injured, and nearly 1,400 buildings had been burned. By the summer of 1967, the predominantly African-American neighborhood of Virginia Park was ready to explode. Some 60,000 poor people were crammed into the neighborhood, living in squalor in divided and subdivided apartments. The Detroit police, which had only about 50 African-Americans at the time, was viewed as a white occupying army. Detroit Mayor Kavanaugh asked Michigan Governor George Romney to send in the state police, but the 300 more officers couldn't keep the riot from spreading to a 100-block area. The National Guard was called in but didn't arrive until evening. By the end of the day, over 1,000 were arrested, but still the riot kept growing. Snipers fired at firemen, and fire hoses were cut. Governor Romney asked President Lyndon Johnson to send in U.S. troops. Nearly 2,000 Army paratroopers arrived on Tuesday and began patrolling the streets. On Thursday, July 27, order was finally restored. Over 7,000 people were arrested during the rioting. Some 5,000 people were left homeless. This was the worst U.S. riot in 100 years, occurring during a period of numerous riots in America.
And I was one of the 2,000 Army paratroopers that showed up for that. That was my first visit to the state of Michigan. And on 23 July 1998, it was reported that Congress made the Air Force buy more C-130 transport aircraft against its wishes. Only five of the 256 C-130s went to the Air National Guard and Air Reserves, which were requested by the Air Force. The planes were built in Georgia, and it was pure politics. And that's military history for today. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, bro.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, last week, a man was speaking at a political rally in western Pennsylvania when he was shot in the head, causing him to dive down behind the lectern for cover. He'd been shot by a sniper with an AR-15 from a distance of 130 yards. Several people rushed to the stage to cover the wounded man with their own bodies to ensure that he wasn't shot again. Law enforcement officers located the sniper, and he was shot and killed. The man shot in the head was rushed to the hospital, treated, and released. Two others were critically wounded by gunfire, and one other attendee was killed.
Thanks, Colonel. Some of you might be thinking right now, hey, this sounds a bit familiar to me. And of course, you're right. This week's self-defense report is all about President Donald J. Trump and the assassination attempt made on his life. I watched in horror as President Trump was shot in the ear and dove down behind the lectern. I didn't know if he was going to get up again. I just saw him clutch his head and then dive down. Many of us thought he might be dead, but here's what I took away from the assassination attempt. First, you can't keep a good man down. Donald Trump is a warrior. He jumped back up and pumped his fist and yelled, fight, fight, fight. He didn't cower and he didn't run. Warrior mindset is the baseline of personal defense. You can carry 10 guns, but if you don't have the courage to stand and fight, then you will not prevail. I was very proud of him at that moment, and he inspired me. Second, Donald Trump is very intelligent. His tactics were sound. He was being attacked by overwhelming force, so he dove behind cover to prevent more bullets from ripping into his body. There's a difference between cover and concealment. Cover will stop a bullet, but concealment only hides you. Most lecterns will not stop bullets, especially AR-15 bullets. But I'm pretty sure this lectern was special because it was designed just for this occasion. Anyone who's ever been in combat knows this saying, when the bullets start flying, you get small real fast. You get down low, you get behind something, it will stop a bullet until you're in a position to return fire and take out the enemy. And that's exactly what Donald Trump did. He got down low behind cover and he lived to fight another day. I think the most important thing that all of us can take away from this incident is that we saw who Donald Trump really is when he comes under fire. That was his brave heart moment. He said to the mainstream media and the Democrat Party, you may take our lives, but you'll never take our freedom. Front Lines of Freedom salutes this brave man and wishes him a speedy recovery on the campaign trail. God bless Donald Trump. And to the Democrat lunatics out there, we respectfully request that you please stop shooting our candidate.
Well said, Skip. Our movie of the month is Cape May County. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send your comments to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, former Space Force Lieutenant Colonel Matt Lohmeyer will discuss his book. Then Greg Wrightstone from the CO2 Coalition will discuss the dangers our planet is not facing. And Diane Raver will present the movie of the month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And it's now available in Spanish. You can also purchase this book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation in your community. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.